Queen began to laugh. She drew free of the red caps who had held her as if their touch were no more than spider webs, though several fell, screaming to the floor, their palms burned and blackened, their fingers snapped. Already they scavenge for your throne like dogs worrying at a bone, she said to the king, as blood ran out the corners of his mouth and his eyes rolled up to the whites. What legacy? You think a Daean will be king after you, as you wished?
She seized a Daean by the arm. He cried out in shock and pain. The queen's hair whipped around them both, and she grinned down at the king.
You took my son, she said. Now I take yours.
She vanished, and a Daean vanished with her.
The king gave a cry and fell to the ground, scrabbling at the earth with gauntleted hands. His crown tumbled from his head and struck the stone floor as he choked out garbled words. Perhaps he was trying to say the queen's name, perhaps the Daean's, perhaps even Kieran's. Emma would never know. The king's body stiffened and slumped, and both Eohaid and Ethna cried out. He had gone still, but his blood continued to run out around him, snaking across the floor in rivulets. The redcaps were scrambling back from the king's body, their faces masks of horror. Winter lowered the pike staff he had been aiming at Emma.
The king is dead. King Aron is dead, he cried,
and Emma realized it must be true. It was safe to speak the king's true name now that he was no longer alive.
The redcaps fled, save Winter, who held his ground, pouring out of the throne room in a river of crimson. Christina was shouting for the other shadow hunters. She held Mark by one hand, and he gripped a stunned-looking Kieran. Jace and Clary were scrambling over a pile of boulders to get to them. Julian was only yards away. Emma began to run as the king's body burst into flames. She cast one look back over her shoulder. The king was burning, and so was the ground everywhere his blood had spilled. Small fires and larger ones, burning fierce and hot, consuming the stone floor as if it were kindling. The king's body had already vanished behind a sheet of flames. A figure reared up out of the smoke, cutting Emma off. It was Ethna. She gleamed all over like a weapon, her bronze armor unsmudged, her metallic eyes gleaming with bloodlust.
My oath to the king died with him, she said, baring her teeth. Your life is forfeit now, murderer!
She lunged at Emma. Emma's sword was gone. She flung up the copy of the Black Volume, and Ethna's sword plunged into it. Ethna flung it aside in disgust, the shredded remains of the book landing on the burning ground, its pages bursting into flames. Emma scrabbled at her belt for a dagger. She threw it, and Ethna caught it in her free hand. She flung it aside with a contemptuous sneer. Emma could hear Clary calling out to her, and the others shouting for her to come quickly. She realized with a sinking heart that they must not be able to see her. They wouldn't know she needed help. They wouldn't know. Ethna's blade flew through the air, bronze cutting through smoke. Emma twisted aside and fell to the ground, rolling to avoid the slashing blows that followed. Each time Ethna's blade barely missed her, it cut a deep gouge into the stone floor. It was getting harder for Emma to breathe. She scrambled to her knees, only to have Ethna plant a booted foot in her shoulder. She shoved and Emma sprawled backward, hitting the ground hard.
Die on your back, bitch!
Ethna said, raising her sword high.
Emma flung her hands out as if they could ward off the blade. Ethna laughed, swung down, and toppled sideways.
Emma scrambled upright, choking on smoke and disbelief. Julian. He had thrown himself onto Ethna and was kneeling on her back, stabbing her over and over with something clenched in his fist. Emma realized with a shock that it was the iron figurine that Simon had given to him. Ethna was screaming, trying to writhe away from the iron. Emma whirled around. The room was blazing with fire, the boulders glowing like red-hot coals. Hot pain stabbed her side. A coal had landed on the sleeve of her jacket.
She yanked it off furiously and stomped on it, putting the fire out.
Sorry, Clary. She thought she could still see the dim figures of the others through the smoke. The surface of the portal seemed to ripple like melting glass.
Julian! She screamed and held out her hand. Leave her! We have to get to the others! He looked up, his eyes wild with rage, and Ethna wrenched away from him with a yelp of anger and pain. Julian landed on his feet, already racing toward Emma. Together they fled toward the sound of Christina's voice, rising and desperate, shouting their names. Emma thought she could hear Mark, too, and the others. A sheet of flame blazed up from the ground, knocking them backward. They swung around, looking for a way around it, and Emma gasped. Ethna and Eohaid were striding toward them. Ethna bloodied and glaring, Eohaid gleaming and deadly. The riders were at the heart of their power. Emma and Julian were starving, exhausted and weakened. Emma's heart sank.
Christina!
She screamed.
Go! Go! Get out of here!
Julian caught hold of her wrist.
There's only one way.
His eyes flicked toward the wall. She tensed, then nodded, and the two of them took off running, just as the riders began to raise their blades. Emma heard them cry out in confusion and disappointed bloodlust. She didn't care. The portal was looming up in front of her like a dark window of a high-rise building, all shadow and gleam. She reached it and leapt, Julian's hand in hers, and together they sailed through the portal.
Diego wasn't sure how long he'd been in the Barrenstone cell. There were no windows, no sense of time passing. He knew Rayan and Divya were in the same prison, but the thick stone walls of the cells kept them from being able to shout or call to each other. It was almost a relief when there were footsteps in the corridor, and instead of the usual guard who came twice a day with a plate of bland food, Zara appeared, resplendent in Centaurian gear. He would have thought she would be smirking, but she was oddly expressionless. Cortana was strapped to her side, and she caressed its hilt absently as she looked at him through the bars, as if she were stroking the head of a dog.
"My dear fiancé," she said, "how are you finding the accommodations? Not too cold and unwelcoming?"
He said nothing. The rune of quietude the cohort had put on him had been removed almost immediately after the meeting, but that didn't mean he had anything to talk to Zara about.
"And to think," she went on, "if you'd played your cards a little differently, you might have been living in the guard tower with me."
"And that wouldn't have been cold and unwelcoming," spat Diego, "living with someone I hate." She flinched a little. Diego was surprised. Surely she knew they hated each other.
"You have no right or reason to hate me," she said. "I'm the one who was betrayed. You were a convenient marriage prospect. Now you're a traitor. It would shame me to marry you."
Diego let his head fall back against the wall.
"Good," he said wearily. "You've taken everything from me. At least I no longer have to pretend to love you."
Her lips tightened.
"I know you never intended to go through with the marriage. You were just trying to buy time for your vigilante brother. Still, I'll make you a deal. You claim Jaime still has the fairy artifact. We want it. It should be in government hands."
Her lips twisted into an ugly smirk.
"If you tell us where to find it, I'll pardon you."
"I haven't the vaguest idea," said Diego.
"Carrying that sword around won't make you Emma Carstairs."
She glared at him.
"You shouldn't have said that. Or the thing about how I've taken everything from you already. You still have a lot to lose." She turned her head. "Milo, bring the second prisoner forward."
There was a blur of movement in the shadowy corner, and the cell door opened. Diego strained forward as a dark figure was hurled into the cell alongside him. Milo slammed the door shut and locked it as the new arrival groaned and sat up.
Diego's heart turned over in his chest. Even bruised and bloody, with his lip cut and a burn scar on his cheek, he would have recognized his younger brother anywhere. "Jaime," he breathed.
He seems to know no more about the artifact than you do, said Zara. But then, without the mortal sword, we can't make him tell the truth. So we have to fall back on more old-fashioned methods of dealing with liars and traitors. She traced the hilt of Cortana with loving fingertips. I'm sure you know what I mean.
Jaime,
Diego said again. The ceiling was too low for him to stand up. He crawled across the floor to his brother, pulling Jaime against him. Jaime, half-conscious, lolled against his shoulder, his eyes almost slitted shut. His clothes were torn and wet with blood. Diego felt a cold fear at his heart. What wounds lay underneath?
Hola, hermano,
Jaime whispered.
During his discussions with the Inquisitor about the location of the artifact, your brother became overexcited.
He needed to be subdued. Now Zara did smile.
The guards accidentally, shall we say, injured him. It would be a shame if his injuries were to become infected, or if he were to die because he lacked proper medical care.
Give me a steely,
hissed Diego. He had never hated anyone more than he hated Zara at that moment. He needs an Arazi.
Give me the artifact, said Zara, and he can have one.
Diego said nothing. He had no idea where the Eternidad was, the heirloom that Jaime had suffered so much to protect. He held his brother tighter, his lips pressed together. He would not beg Zara for mercy. She had only contempt for the idea.
No,
she preened.
As you like. Perhaps when your brother is screaming with fever, you will feel differently. Call upon me, Diego dear, if you ever change your mind.
Manuel strode into the throne room, smirking, Oban on his heels. Manuel couldn't help the smirking. As he sometimes told people, it was just a natural expression on his face. It was true that he also liked chaos, though, and right now there was chaos aplenty to please him. The throne room looked charred, the rock walls and floor smeared with gray ash. The place reeked of blood and sulfur. Bodies of redcaps were strewn on the floor, one covered by an expensive-looking tapestry. On the far wall, the shrinking portal showed a beach at night, under a red moon. Oban clicked his tongue, which Manuel had learned was the fairy equivalent of letting out a low whistle.
What happened here? It looks like the aftermath of one of my more famous parties.
Manuel poked at the tapestry-covered mound with his toe.
And the fields outside are full of fleeing Seely Fae now that their queen is gone,
Oban went on.
Manuel, I demand an explanation. Where is my father?
Winter, the somber-looking redcap leader, came over to them. He was streaked with blood and ash.
Prince, he said, your father lies here.
He indicated the mound Manuel was poking with his toe. Manuel bent over and yanked the tapestry back. The thing beneath did not look human, or fae, or as if it had ever lived at all. It was the blackened, crumbling outline of a man drawn in ash, its face a rictus. Something gleamed at its throat. Manuel knelt to take it, an etched glass vial of scarlet liquid.
Interesting.
He placed it in his jacket pocket.
What's that? Said Oban.
For a moment, Manuel felt a spark of worry that Oban had chosen to take an interest in something important. Fortunately, that was not the case. Oban had caught sight of a gleaming elf bolt necklace among his father's remains. He bent to grab the shining thing, letting it dangle from his fingers.
Kieran, he said incredulously. Kieran killed our father?
Doesn't matter, said Manuel in a low voice. The old man is dead.
That is good news.
It was indeed. The previous king had been an uneasy ally, if one could call him an ally at all. Though the cohort had helped him spread the blight in Idris, and that had pleased him, he had never trusted them or interested himself in their greater plans. Nor had he warned them of his intention to seize the Black Volume, an event which had irritated Horace greatly. Oban would be different. He would trust those who had put him in power. He was a fool.
"It might give Kirin claim to the throne if it were known," said Oban, his slack, handsome face darkening. "Who saw the king slain? What of Kirin's Nephilim companions?"
"My red caps saw, but they will not speak," said Winter, as Oban moved to the throne.
The king's crown rested on its seat, gleaming dully.
"Prince Kirin has fled with most of the Nephilim to the human world."
Oban's face tightened.
"Where he might brag of slaying our father?"
"I don't think he will do that," said General Winter.
A look of relief crossed Oban's face. He did tend to respond like putty to anyone in authority, Manuel thought.
"He seems to love those Nephilim who he has befriended dearly, and they him. I do not think he wants the throne, or would endanger them."
"We will keep a watch out," said Oban. "Where is Adain?"
"Adain, your brother, was taken prisoner by the Seelie Queen."
"Adain take a prisoner?" asked Oban, and when Winter nodded, he laughed and tumbled into the throne's seat.
"And what of the queen's son, the brat?"
"Gone with the undead witch through the portal," said Winter. "It does not seem likely they will survive long."
"Well, the kingdom cannot go without a ruler. It seems my destiny has found me."
Oban handed the crown to Winter.
"Crown me."
With the death of the king, the portal was disappearing. It was now the size of a porthole on a boat. Through the small circle, Manuel could see a dead city, ruined towers and broken roads. Something lay in a heap on the floor near the portal, among the signs of a fight. Manuel stopped to pick it up. It was a bloody jean jacket. He frowned, turning it over in his hands. It was a small jacket, a girl's, slashed and bloody, one sleeve partially burned. He slipped his fingers into the breast pocket and withdrew a ring stamped with butterflies.
"Fairchild."
Manuel returned to Oban just as Winter placed the crown on the prince's head, looking extremely uncomfortable. Manuel shook the jacket in Winter's direction.
"You said most of the Nephilim returned to the human world. What happened to the girl who wore this? The girl and the boy? The Nephilim prisoners?"
"They went through the portal," Winter gestured toward it. "They're as good as dead. That land is poison, especially to those such as they." He stepped back from Oban. "You are king now, sire."
Oban touched the crown on his head and laughed.
"Bring wine, Winter. I am parched. Empty the cellars. The most beautiful maidens and youths of the court, bring them to me. Today's a great day."
Manuel smiled down at the bloody jacket. "Yes, today is indeed a day for celebration."
Part 2. Thule.
I had a dream, which was not all a dream.
The bright sun was extinguished, and the stars did wander, darkling in the eternal space, rayless and pathless, and the icy earth swung blind and blackening in the moonless air. Morn came and went and came and brought no day, and men forgot their passions in the dread of this their desolation, and all hearts were chilled into a selfish prayer for light. Lord Byron, Darkness.
Chapter 17. In a Strange City.
It wasn't a desert. It was a beach. The blackness of the portal had been like nothing Julian had ever experienced before. No light, sound, or movement, only the stomach-dropping feeling of having tumbled down an elevator shaft. When the world returned at last, it was a silent explosion rushing toward him. Reborn into sound and movement, he hit the ground hard, sand spraying up around him. He rolled to his side, heart pounding. He had lost hold of Emma's hand somewhere in the hurtling darkness, but there she was, struggling to her knees beside him. Her fairy clothes were shredded and bloodstained, but she seemed unharmed. A gasping pain went through him, sharp as an arrow. It took him a moment to recognize it as relief. Emma was scrambling to her feet, brushing herself off. Julian rose dizzily. They were on a wide, familiar-looking beach at night, dotted with half-eroded rock formations. Bluffs rose behind them, rickety wooden stairs twisting down their faces to connect the road above with the sand. Music was playing, loud and jarring. The far end of the beach was thronged with people, none of whom seemed to have noticed their abrupt arrival. It was a peculiar crowd, a mix of humans, vampires, and even a few fairies dotted here and there, garbed in black and metal. Julian squinted but couldn't make out details. Emma touched the night vision rune on her own arm and frowned at him.
"My runes aren't working," she whispered, "same as in fairy."
Julian shook his head as if to say, "I don't know what's going on." He started as something sharp pricked his side. Glancing down, he realized his phone had been smashed to pieces. Jagged bits of plastic stuck into his skin. He dropped the phone with a wince. It would be no use to anyone now. He glanced around. The sky was heavily clouded, and a blood-red moon cast a dull glow across the sand. "I know this beach," he said. The rock formations were familiar, the curve of the shoreline, the shape of the waves, though the color of the ocean water was ink black, and where it broke against the shoreline it left edgings of black lace. Emma touched his shoulder. "Julian, we need to make a plan." She was gray with fatigue, shadows smudged under her deep brown eyes. Her golden hair fell in thick tangles around her shoulders. Emotion exploded inside Julian. Pain, love, panic, grief, and yearning poured through him like blood from a wound whose sutures had torn open. He staggered away from Emma and crumpled against a rock, his stomach heaving violently as it emptied itself of bitter bile. When his body had stopped spasming, he wiped his mouth, scrubbed his hands with sand, and returned to where Emma had partly climbed one of the rock formations. Sea stacks, they were called, or something like that. He clenched his hands. His emotions roiled like a hurricane tide, pressing against the inside of his skull. And in response, his mind seemed to be running all over the place, catching at random pieces of information and tossing them up like roadblocks. "Focus," he told himself, and bit at his lip until the pain cleared his head. He could taste blood. Emma was halfway up the sea stack, staring toward the south. "This is really, really weird." "Weird how?" He was surprised how normal he sounded. In the distance, two figures passed by, both vampires. One a girl with long brown hair. They waved at him casually. What the hell was going on? She jumped down. "Are you okay?" she asked, pushing back her hair. "I think it was the trip through the portal," he lied. Whatever was going on with him, it wasn't that. "Look at this." Emma had somehow managed to hang on to her phone through all their travails. She flicked through to show Julian a photo she'd taken from the sea stack. It was dark, but he immediately recognized the shoreline. And, in the distance, the ruins of Santa Monica Pier. The Ferris wheel had been tipped over, a crushed hunk of metal. Dark shapes wheeled in the sky above. They were definitely not birds. Emma swallowed hard. "This is Los Angeles, Julian. This is right near the Institute." "But the king said this was Thule. He said it was a world that was poisonous to Nephilim." He broke off in horror.
At the opposite end of the beach from the crowd, two long columns of human figures were marching in neat military formation. As they grew closer, Julian caught sight of a flash of scarlet gear. He and Emma dived behind the nearest rock formation, pressing themselves flat against it. They could see the marchers getting closer. The throng at the other end of the beach had started to move toward them as well, and the music had vanished. There was only the sound of the crashing waves, the wind, and marching feet. "And darkened," Emma breathed as they drew closer. During the Dark War, Sebastian Morgenstern had kidnapped hundreds of shadow hunters and controlled them using his own version of the Mortal Cup. They had been called the Undarkened, and they had been recognizable by the scarlet gear they wore. Julian's father had been one of them until Julian had killed him. He still dreamed about it. "But the Undarkened are all dead," Julian said in a distant, mechanical tone. "They died when Sebastian died." "In our world," Emma turned to him. "Julian, we know what this is. We just don't want it to be the truth. This is... Thule is a version of our own world. Something must have happened differently in the past here. Something that put this world on an alternate path, like Edom." Julian knew she was right. He had known it since he recognized the pier. He shoved back thoughts of his own family, his father. He couldn't think about that right now. The columns of marching Undarkened had given way to a cluster of guards holding banners. Each banner bore the sigil of a star inside a circle. "By the angel," Emma whispered. She pressed her hand against her mouth. "Morgenstern, the morning star." Behind the flag bearers walked Sebastian. He looked older than he had the last time Julian had seen him. A teenage boy with hair like white ice, powered by hatred and poison. He looked to be in his mid-20s now, still slim and boyish, but with a harder cast to his face. The features that had been gently edged were sharp as glass now, and his black eyes burned. Phosphorus, the Morgenstern sword, was slung over his shoulder in a scabbard worked with a design of stars and flames. Walking just behind him was Jace Herondale. It was a harder and stranger blow. They had just left Jace, fighting by their side in the Unseelie Court, weary and tired, but still fierce and protective. This Jace looked to be about the same age as that one. He was strongly muscled all over, his golden hair tousled, his face as handsome as ever. But there was a dead, dark light in his golden eyes, a sullen ferocity that Julian associated with the cohort and their ilk, those who attacked rather than those who protected. Behind them came a woman with gray-brown hair Julian recognized as Amatis Greymark, Luke's sister. She had been one of the first and fiercest of Sebastian's Undarkened, and that seemed true here as well. Her face was deeply lined, her mouth grimly set. She pushed a prisoner ahead of her, someone dressed in Shadowhunter black, a strip of rough canvas wrapped around and around their head, obscuring their features.
"Come," Sebastian cried, and some invisible force amplified his voice so that it boomed up and down the beach. "Undarkened, guests, gather round. We are here to celebrate the capture and execution of a significant traitor, one who has turned against the light of the star."
There was a roar of excitement. The crowd began to gather into a loose rectangle, with Sebastian and his guards at the south end of it. Julian saw Jace lean over to say something to Sebastian, and Sebastian laughed with an easy camaraderie that sent a chill down Julian's spine. Jace wore a gray suit jacket, not a scarlet uniform, so he wasn't Undarkened then. His gaze flicked around the crowd. Other than Amatis, he recognized several shadow hunters he had known vaguely from the Los Angeles conclave. He saw the young-looking vampire girl who had waved at him before, giggling and talking to Anselm Nightshade. And he saw Emma. It was clearly Emma. He would have known Emma anywhere, in any costume, in any darkness or light. The bloody moon spilled onto her pale hair. She wore a red dress with no back, and her skin was smooth and free of runes. She was talking to a tall boy who was mostly in shadow, but Julian barely looked at him. He was looking at her. His Emma. Beautiful and alive and safe and... She laughed and reached her arms up. The tall young man threaded his hands into Emma's hair, and she kissed him. It hit him with the sudden force of a train. Jealousy. White-hot, boiling, venomous. It was all Julian could do to stay behind the rock as the boy's hands trailed down Emma's bare back. He shook with the force of his feeling. Emotion tore at him, threatening to overwhelm him and drive him to his knees. Hot waves of jealousy mixed with desperate longing. Those ought to be his hands on Emma's hair, her skin. He turned his head to the side, gasping. His shirt was stuck to his body with sweat. Emma, the real Emma, still pressed up against the rock beside him, looked at him with alarm.
Julian? What's wrong?
His heartbeat had already begun to slow. This was his Emma. The other was a fake, a simulacrum.
Look,
he whispered and gestured. Emma followed his gaze and blushed.
Oh, that's us.
Julian stared around the rock again. Emma and the boy had pulled apart. And how had he not seen it? It was like looking into a mirror that showed you what you might look like in a few years. There he was. Blackthorn hair and eyes, sea glass bracelet, dressed in red and black. Julian stared as the other him drew the other Emma closer and kissed her again. It definitely wasn't a first kiss, or even a second one. Other Julian's fingers trailed down other Emma's back, obviously luxuriating in the feel of her bare skin. His hands found her satin-covered hips and splayed over them, pulling her body closer. She raised a leg and hooked it over his hip, letting her head fall back so he could press his lips to her throat. Other Julian was a very confident kisser, apparently.
This is the worst, said Emma. Not only are we apparently darkened in this world, we're huge on PDA.
The other darkened probably can't stand us, said Julian. Emma, this seems recent. This world couldn't have split from ours that long ago.
Silence! Sebastian's voice echoed up and down the beach, and the crowd hushed. Alternate Emma and Julian stopped kissing, which was a relief. Jace, put the traitor on her knees.
So it was a woman. Julian watched with a twisting feeling in his empty stomach as Jace shoved the prisoner to her knees and began slowly to unwind her blindfold.
Ash, Sebastian called. Ash! Come watch, my child, and learn.
Julian felt Emma freeze up in shock beside him. There was a stir among the guards, and from among them appeared Ash Morgenstern, his expression rigid. He had changed more since the last time they'd seen him than either Jace or Sebastian had. He had gone from 13 to what Emma would have guessed was 17. He was no longer a skinny kid, but a boy on the cusp of adulthood. Tall and broad-shouldered. His white blonde hair had been cut short, and he wasn't wearing a darkened red, just an ordinary white thermal shirt and jeans. He still had the X-shaped scar on his throat, though. It was unmistakable, even at this distance.
Ash crossed his arms over his chest. I'm here, Father, he said blandly.
And it struck Julian how peculiar it was. This 17-year-old boy calling someone who looked 5 years older than he did, father.
This is our world's Ash, Julian said. The one Annabelle brought through the portal.
Emma nodded.
His scar, I saw.
Jace drew the last of the coverings away from the kneeling woman's face. Emma flinched back as if struck. It was Maris Lightwood. Her hair had been cut very short, and her face was haggard. Ash watched expressionless as she gazed around her in silent horror. A silver chain dangled around his throat. Julian didn't recall him having it in Faerie, How many years had elapsed for him here between his escape into the portal and Emma and Julian's arrival in Thule?
Marys Lightwood, said Sebastian, pacing in a slow circle around her.
Emma hadn't moved or made a sound since her initial flinch. Julian wondered if she was remembering Maris in their world, grieving at the sight of her former husband's pyre, but surrounded by her children, her grandchildren. Emma must be wondering about her own parents, he realized with a jolt, wondering if they were alive in this world, but she hadn't said a word.
You stand accused of aiding and assisting rebels against the cause of the fallen star. Now, we know you did it, so we're not having a trial, because we're against those anyway. But you. You committed the greatest treason of all. You tried to break the bond between two brothers. Jace and I are brothers. You are not his mother. The only family he has is me.
Oh, my God, Emma whispered. This is that weird bond they had. When Sebastian possessed Jace, remember? So that happened in this world.
I killed my own mother, Lilith, for Jace, said Sebastian. Now he will kill his mother for me.
Jace unsheathed the sword at his waist. It had a long, wicked silver blade that glimmered red in the moonlight. Julian thought again of the Jace in their world, laughing, joking, animated. It seemed like something more than possession was at work here, like this Jace was dead inside.
Sebastian's lips were turned up at the corners. He was smiling, but it wasn't a very human smile.
Any last words, Maris?
Maris twisted around so she was looking up at Jace. The tense lines of her face seemed to relax, and for a moment Julian saw John Carstairs looking at Emma, or his own mother looking at him. That mixture of love for what is, and the sorrow for what cannot be kept.
Do you remember, Jace? She said. That song I used to sing to you when you were a boy? She began to sing, her voice high and wavering.
À la claire enfant de mon allant promener, j'ai trouvé l'eau si belle que je m'y suis baigné. Il y a longtemps que je t'aimais, j'aimais, je ne t'oublierai.
Julian only knew enough French to translate a few words. I have loved you for a long time. I will never forget you.
Il y a longtemps que je t'aimais.
Maris sang, her voice rising, quavering at the highest note. Ash was gripping his own elbows tightly. He turned his head aside, just at the moment that Jace brought the sword down and across, severing Maris's head from her body. White bone, red blood. Her body crumpled to the sand, her head rolling to lie cheek down, open-eyed. She still seemed to be staring at Jace. Blood had spattered Ash's face, his shirt. The crowd was clapping and cheering. Jace bent to clean his sword on the sand as Sebastian strolled over to Ash, his smile turning from inhuman to something else, something possessive.
I hope that was a learning experience, he said to Ash.
I learned not to wear white to an execution, said Ash, brushing his hand down the front of his shirt. It left red smears behind.
Useful. Once we have the mortal instruments in hand, you'll see a lot more death, Ash.
Sebastian chuckled and once again raised his voice.
Feeding time, he announced, and the words rang up and down the beach.
There was a scream inside Julian's head, clawing to get out. He glanced at Emma and saw the same scream in her eyes. Maybe it belonged to them both. She grabbed his wrist with enough force to grind small bones together.
We have to go, we have to get away.
Her words tumbled over each other. Julian didn't even have time to agree. As the vampires closed in on Maris's body, they ran for the bluffs, keeping low. The night was filled with a cacophony of shrieks and howls, and the air carried the coppery tinge of blood. Emma was whispering,
"No, no, no,"
under her breath, even as she hit the bottom of a rickety wooden staircase and bolted up it in a crouching run. Julian followed, doing his best not to look back. He didn't want to see what feeding time looked like. The stairs shook underfoot but held. The top of the bluffs were in sight. Emma reached the end of the stairs and cried out as she was whisked out of sight. Julian's vision went white. He had no awareness of climbing the rest of the steps. He was simply at the top of the bluffs, familiar highway, rows of parked cars, sand and grass underfoot. And there was Emma, held in the grip of a tall, red-headed boy whose familiar face smacked Julian like a punch in the gut.
"Cameron?" Julian said, incredulous.
"Cameron Ashdown." Cameron looked about 19 or 20. His thick red hair was cut military short. He was whipcord lean, wearing a tan t-shirt and camo pants. A Sam Brown belt slung diagonally across his shoulder. There was a pistol thrust through it. His face twisted in disgust.
"Both of you together. I might have guessed."
Julian took a step forward.
"Let her go, you in darkened piece of—"
Cameron's eyes rounded with almost comical surprise, and Emma took advantage of the moment to kick back savagely, twisting her body to deliver several quick punches to his side. She spun away from him as he gagged, but he'd already gotten the pistol out of its holster. He pointed it at both of them. Shadowhunters didn't use guns, but Julian could tell just by the way he held it that this Cameron Ashdown knew them well. If Cameron shot, Julian thought, there might be time for him to throw himself in front of Emma. He'd take the bullet, even if he hated the idea of leaving her here alone.
Cameron raised his voice. "Livia," he called, "you're going to want to see this."
Julian's chest turned to ice. He imagined he was still breathing. He must be, or he'd die, but he couldn't feel it. Couldn't feel the blood in his body, or the pulse of his breath, or the beat of his heart. He only saw her, appearing from between two cars. She walked toward them casually, her long, dark blackthorn hair blowing in the wind off the sea.
Livy.
She looked about 17. She wore black leather pants with a bullet belt slung around her waist and a gray tank top with holes in it over a mesh shirt. Her boots were thick-soled with a dozen buckles. On her wrists were D-ring canvas bracelets with short throwing knives shoved under the straps. A scar, one of many, cut across her face, from the top of her left temple across her eye to the middle of her cheek. She carried a shotgun, and as she walked toward them, she raised it effortlessly and pointed it directly at Julian.
"It's them," Cameron said. "Don't know what they're doing away from the other in Darkened."
"Who cares?" Livy said. "I'm gonna kill them, and they'd thank me for it if they still had souls."
Julian threw up his hands. Joy at seeing her, uncontrollable and dizzying, warred with panic.
"Livy, it's us!"
"Don't even try," she spat. She pumped the shotgun expertly. "I tell you to pray, but the angel is dead."
"Look," Emma started, and Livy began to swing the gun toward her. Julian took a step toward his sister, and then Cameron, who Julian had almost forgotten was there, said,
"Wait."
Livy froze.
"This had better be good, Cam."
Cameron pointed at Julian.
"His collar's torn."
He shook his head impatiently.
"Show her,"
he said to Julian.
"Your rune,"
Emma whispered, and Julian, realization bursting brightly behind his eyes, yanked his collar down to show Livy the rune on his chest. Though Julian's impermanent runes, night vision, stealth, shore strike, had been fading to gray since they'd entered Faerie, his Parabatai rune stood out black and clear.
Livy froze.
"The Undarkin can't bear Nephilim runes," said Julian. "You know that, Livy."
"I know you think we're Emma and Julian, the Undarkin version," said Emma. "But we've seen them. They're down on the beach," she pointed.
Seriously, look. A flicker of doubt crossed Libby's face.
Cameron, go look.
Cameron went to the edge of the bluffs and peered down through a pair of binoculars. Julian held his breath. He could tell Emma was holding hers as well.
Yeah, they're there, Cameron said after a long pause. And they're making out. Gross.
They were always doing that before they were in Darken, said Libby. Some things never change. Emma raised her left hand to show her voyance room. We're shadow hunters. We know you, Libby, and we love you.
Stop,
Libby said fiercely. Fine. Maybe you're not the Undarkin, but this could still be some kind of demonic shape-changing.
These are angelic runes, said Julian. We're not demons.
Then who are you? Libby cried, and her voice echoed with an awful hopelessness, a loneliness as dark and bottomless as a well. Who am I supposed to think you are? We're still us, Emma said. Jules and Emma. We're from another world. One where Sebastian is not in charge. One with runes.
Livy stared at her blankly.
Liv, said Cameron, lowering his binoculars. The party on the beach is starting to break up. They'll be climbing up here any second. What are we doing?
Livy hesitated, but only for a second. Julian guessed that a lot of free time to make decisions wasn't a luxury this version of his sister had. Let's take them back to the Bradbury, she said. Maybe Diana will be back. She's seen a lot. Maybe she has some idea of what's going on here.
Diana? Diana Rayburn? Said Emma with relief. Yes, take us to Diana, please.
Cameron and Libby exchanged a look of complete bafflement.
All right. Fine, Libby said finally.
She gestured toward a black Jeep Wrangler with tinted windows parked along the side of the highway.
Get in the car, both of you, back seat. And don't even consider trying anything funny. I'll blow your heads right off.
Libby was riding shotgun, which meant she was sitting in the passenger seat with an actual shotgun slung across her lap. Beside her, Cameron drove with a sharp efficiency that was entirely at odds with the hapless, slightly lazy Cameron Emma knew in her world. He navigated the car effortlessly around the massive potholes that pocked the asphalt of the Pacific Coast Highway like dings in the side of an old car. Julian was silent, staring out his window with an appalled fascination. There was little to see, except the ruined road swept by their headlights. But the darkness itself was startling. The absence of streetlights, road signs, and illuminated windows lining the road was shocking in itself, like looking at a face missing its eyes. Light finally evolved out of the darkness as they reached the end of the highway, where a tunnel connected it to the 10 freeway. On their right was the Santa Monica Pier, a familiar jetty now in ruins, as if a giant had hacked at it with an axe. Chunks of wood and concrete lay tumbled and jagged in the water. Only the old carousel was untouched. It was lit up, atonal music pouring from its speakers. Clinging to the backs of the old-fashioned painted ponies were shadowy, inhuman shapes, their chittering giggles carried on the night air. The faces of the ponies appeared to be twisted into tormented, shrieking masks. Emma looked away, glad when the car went into the tunnel, cutting off her view of the merry-go-round.
The pier is one of the first places the Hellbeast staked out, Cameron said, glancing into the back seat. Who knew that demons liked amusement parks?
Emma cleared her throat. Mad for funnel cakes?
Cameron laughed dryly. Same old Emma, sarcastic in the face of adversity.
Livy darted a sharp look at him.
I guess we shouldn't ask about Disneyland, said Julian in a flat voice.
Julian probably hadn't expected Cameron and Libby to laugh, but the way they both tensed suggested that something really terrible had happened at Disneyland.
Emma decided not to pursue it. There were bigger questions.
When did this all happen? She said.
Just after the Dark War, said Libby, when Sebastian won.
So he attacked all the institutes? Emma asked.
She hadn't wanted to think about it, hadn't wanted to court even the tiny possibility that
Her parents might be alive in this world, but she couldn't help the catch of hope in her voice.
Los Angeles, too?
Yes, said Libby. Her voice was flat. Your parents were killed. Our father was darkened. Emma flinched. She'd known there was no real hope, but it still hurt. And Julian must have wondered about his father, she knew. She wanted to reach out a hand to him, but the memory of the emotionless Julian of the past week held her back.
In our world, those things happen too, said Julian after a long pause. But we won the war.
Sebastian died, said Emma. Clary killed him.
Clary Fairchild? Said Cameron. His voice was thick with doubt. She was murdered by the demon Lilith at the Battle of the Burren.
No, said Emma stubbornly.
Clary and her friends won the Battle of the Burren. There are paintings of it. She rescued Jace with the sword Glorious and they tracked Sebastian down in Edom. He never won.
Livy tapped her short fingernails on the barrel of her gun.
Nice story.
So, you're claiming you come from a place where Sebastian is dead, demons aren't roaming the streets, and Shadowhunters still have angelic power?
Yes, Emma said.
Livy turned to look at her. The scar that cut across her eye was an angry red in the scarlet moonlight.
Well, if it's so great there, what are you doing here?
It wasn't a planned vacation. Not everything in our world is perfect, Emma said.
Far from it. Really?
She glanced at Julian, and to her surprise, found him looking back at her, matching her searching glance with his own. An echo of their old instant communication flared.
Should we tell Livy that she's dead in our world?
Emma shook her head slightly. Livy didn't believe them about anything yet. That piece of information wouldn't help.
Gotta get off, said Cameron.
There were a few lights out here. Illuminating patches of highway, and Emma could see the occasional illumination dotting the flat plain of the city beyond. It didn't look anything like Los Angeles at night, though. The diamond chains of white light were gone, replaced by irregular spots of brightness. A fire burned somewhere on a distant hill. In front of them, a massive crack divided the highway, as if someone had sliced neatly through the concrete. Cameron swung away from the rift, taking the nearest off-ramp. He dimmed the headlights as they hit the streets and cruised at a slow speed through the residential neighborhood. It was an unremarkable L.A. street lined with one-level ranch houses. Most of them were boarded up, the curtains pulled, only tiny glimpses of light visible within. Many were completely dark, and a few of those showed signs of forced entry, doors torn off at the hinges. Bloodstains smearing the white stucco walls. Along the curb were a few abandoned cars with their trunks still open, as though the people who owned them had been taken away while trying to make a break for it. Saddest of all were the signs that children had once lived here. A torn-apart jungle gym, a bent tricycle lying in the middle of a driveway, a ghostly swing set pushed by the breeze. A curve in the road loomed in front of them. As Cameron swung the car around, the headlights picked out a strange sight. A family, two parents and two children, a boy and a girl, were sitting at a picnic table on their lawn. They were eating in silence from plates of grilled meat, coleslaw, and potato salad. They were all deathly pale. Emma swung around to stare as they receded into the distance.
What's going on with them?
Forsworn, said Libby, curling her lip with distaste. There are mundanes who are loyal to Sebastian. He runs the institutes now, and protects mundanes who swear allegiance to him. Half the remaining mundanes in the world are forsworn.
What about the other half, said Julian?
Rebels, freedom fighters. You can either be one or the other.
You're rebels? Emma said.
Cameron laughed and looked fondly at Libby.
Livia isn't just a rebel. She's the baddest badass rebel of them all.
He stroked the back of Livy's neck gently. Emma hoped Julian's head wouldn't blow right off. Livy clearly wasn't 15 anymore, but she was still Julian's little sister, sort of.
Hastily, Emma said, Shadowhunters and mundanes are united as a rebellion? What about downworlders?
There are no Shadowhunters anymore, Livy said. She held up her right hand.
There was no voyance rune on the back. If Emma squinted, she thought she could glimpse the faint scar where it had once been, a shadow of a shadow. The power of the angel is broken. Steelies don't work, runes fade like ghosts. Sebastian Morgenstern went from institute to institute and killed everyone who wouldn't pledge their loyalty to him. He opened the world to demons, and they salted the earth with demon poisons and shattered the glass towers. Idris was overrun, and the adamant citadel was destroyed. Angelic magic doesn't work. Demonic magic is the only magic there is. She tightened her hands on her shotgun. Most of those who were once shadow hunters are in darkened now. A world without shadow hunters. A world without angels. They had left the residential neighborhood behind and were rolling down what Emma guessed might be Sunset Boulevard. It was hard to tell with the street signs gone. There were other cars on the road, finally, and even a slight slowdown in traffic. Emma glanced to the side and saw a pallid vampire behind the wheel of a Subaru in the next lane. He glanced at her and winked. "We're coming up to a checkpoint," Cameron said. "Let us handle this," said Libby. "Don't talk." The car slowed to a crawl. Up ahead, Emma could see striped barriers. Most of the buildings along the boulevard were ruined shells. They had drawn up alongside one whose crumbling walls circled a mostly intact courtyard that had clearly once been the lobby of an office building. Demons were clustered everywhere, on piles of overturned furniture, clambering up the shattered walls, feeding from metal troughs of dark, sticky stuff that might be blood. In the center of the room was a pole with a woman in a white dress tied to it, blood seeping through her dress. Her head lolled to one side as if she'd fainted. Emma started to undo her seatbelt. "We have to do something."
"No," said Libby sharply. "You'll get killed, and you'll get us killed too. We can't protect the world like that anymore."
"I'm not afraid," Emma said. Libby shot her a white-hot look of anger.
"You should be."
"Checkpoint," snapped Cameron, and the car shot forward and stopped at the barriers. Cam lowered the driver's side window, and Emma nearly jumped out of her seat as an eyeless demon with a wrinkled head like an old grape leaned into the car. It wore a high-collared gray uniform, and though it had no nose or eyes, it did have a mouth that stretched across its face.
"Credentials,"
it hissed. Cameron jerked down his sleeve and stuck out his left hand, baring his wrist. Emma caught a glimpse of the mark on his inner wrist, above his pulse point, just as the demon extruded a gray, raspy tongue that looked like a long, dead worm and licked Cameron's wrist.
"Please," Emma thought, "do not let me puke in the back of this car. I remember this car. I made out with Cameron in the back of this car. Oh, God, that demon licked his wrist. The whole car stinks like demon flesh."
Something covered her hand, something warm and reassuring. She blinked. Julian had wrapped his fingers around hers. The surprise brought her back to herself sharply.
"Ah, Mr. Ashdown," the demon said. "I didn't realize. Have a pleasant evening."
It drew back, and Cameron hit the gas. They had driven several blocks before anyone spoke. "What was that thing with—" Julian began.
"The tongue, I know," Emma said. "What the hell?"
"The demon calling you Mr. Ashdown," Julian finished. "My family are forsworn. Loyal to the Fallen Star," said Cam shortly. "They run the Institute here for Sebastian. Members of the Legion of the Star are marked with special tattoos." Libby showed them the inside of her right wrist, where a design was marked, a star inside a circle, the same sigil that had been on Sebastian's banners earlier. "Mine is forged. That's why Cameron is driving," Libby said. She glanced at him with wry fondness. "His family doesn't know he's not loyal to the Star."
"I can't say I'm astonished Paige and Vanessa turned out to be traitors," said Emma, and she saw Livy flicker an odd glance. Surprised she knew who Paige and Vanessa were? Agreement? Emma wasn't sure.
They had reached downtown L.A., an area that had been pretty thick with demon activity, even in the regular world. Here, the streets were surprisingly crowded. Emma saw vampires and fairies walking around freely, and even a repurposed convenience store advertising blood milkshakes in the window. A group of large cats scuttled by, and as they turned their heads, Emma saw that they had the faces of human babies. No one on the sidewalk gave them a second glance. "So, downworlders," Julian said. "How do they fit in here?"
"You don't want to know," Livy said. "We do," said Emma. "We know warlocks. We could try to get in touch with them here, get help."
"Warlocks?" Livy snapped. "There are no warlocks."
"Once Sebastian opened the world of hell beasts, the warlocks started to get sick. Some died, and as for the rest, their humanity degraded. They turned into demons."
"Into demons?" Emma said. "All the way?"
"What about Magnus?" Julian said. "Magnus Bane." Emma felt a chill run over her. So far they hadn't asked after the welfare of anyone they knew. She suspected both of them found the prospect terrifying.
"Magnus Bane was one of the first great tragedies," said Livy, as if she were reciting an old story everyone knew. "Bane realized he was turning into a demon. He begged his boyfriend, Alexander Lightwood, to kill him. Alec did, and then turned the sword on himself. Their bodies were found together in the ruins of New York."
Julian had gone whiter than paper. Emma put her head down, feeling like she might faint. Magnus and Alec, who had always been a symbol of all that was good, so horribly gone.
"So, that's warlocks," said Libby. "The fair folk are allied with Sebastian, and mostly they live in the protected realms of Faerie. Though some like to visit our world, do a little mischief, you know."
"I don't think we do know," Julian said. "The realms of Faerie are protected."
"The Faeries were Sebastian's allies during the Dark War," said Livy. "They lost a lot of warriors. The Seelie Queen herself was killed. Sebastian rewarded them after the war by giving them what they wanted, isolation. Entrances to Faerie were walled off from this world, and any human, or even in Darkened, who threatens one of the few fairies remaining in Thule is severely punished."
"The Seelie Queen never had a child?" Julian asked.
"She died without children," said Livy. "The Unseelie King has united both courts, and rules over everything there now. His heir is Prince Erek, or at least that's what we last heard. Not a lot of news from Faerie gets out."
"So, there was no second Ash in this world," Emma thought. "Probably good, since one Ash seemed to be more than enough."
"As for the werewolves, the packs are all scattered," said Cameron. "We've got some lone wolves, some who've thrown their lot in with Sebastian. Some are rebels with us. Most were killed. Vampires are doing a bit better because demons don't like to eat them as much. They're already dead." "There are a few vampire cults that have joined up with Sebastian," said Livy. "They worship him and believe that when they eat everyone in Thule, he will lead them through to a world of more people with more blood."
"Raphael Santiago says they're idiots, and when all the people are gone, they'll starve," said Cameron.
"Raphael Santiago is still alive?" "In our world, he's dead," said Julian.
"Well, there's one point for Thule," said Livy with a crooked smile. "When we get to the building, you'll see."
She broke off as a human came pelting out of an alley. A teenage boy, filthy and skinny to the point of starvation, hair hanging in matted clumps. His clothes were dirty, a ragged pack dangling from one arm. Livy tensed.
"Unsworn human," she said. "Demons can hunt them for sport."
"Cam."
"Livy, we shouldn't," Cameron said.
"Pull over," Livy snapped.
Cameron slammed on the brakes, throwing them all forward. Julian was up and out of his seat, throwing his arm out to catch Livy by the shoulder and prevent her from bumping her head. She shot him a startled look. Then she was shaking him off and powering down her window, leaning out to shout to the boy.
"Over here!"
The boy changed course and raced toward them. Behind him, something appeared at the mouth of the alley, something that looked as if it were made of shadows and ragged black wings. It dived toward him at incredible speed, and Livy swore.
"He's not gonna make it. He might, Cameron said. $10.
What the hell? Emma said. She reached for the handle of her door to shove it open. Julian grabbed her by the sleeve of her tunic, yanking her back, and the ragged shadow was on the boy like a hawk on a mouse. He gave one terrified shriek as it seized him, and they both shot up into the air, disappearing into the ashy sky.
Cam hit the gas. A few passers-by were staring at them. Emma was breathing hard. Mundanes weren't supposed to be killed by demons. Shadow hunters were supposed to be able to help. But there were no shadow hunters here.
You owe me $4,000, Cam, Livy said tonelessly.
Yeah, said Cameron.
I'll repay you as soon as the international banking system is reestablished.
What about our family?
Julian said abruptly. He let go of Emma's sleeve. She had almost forgotten he was holding on to her.
Are any of them here, Livia?
Livy's mouth flattened into a tense line.
I'm still not convinced you're Julian, she said. And my family is my business.
They turned abruptly off the street, and for a moment Emma thought they were going to plow into the side of a familiar brown brick structure, the famous downtown Bradbury building, surprisingly still standing. At what felt like the last minute, a sheet of bricks and sandstone rose up out of the way, and they pulled into a cavernous, dark space.
A garage.
They piled out of the car, and Cameron went over to chat with a brown-haired girl in camo pants and a black tank top, who was turning a metal crank that slid the garage door closed. It was a massive slab of brick and metal, operated by a cleverly jointed set of gears.
We're on our own generator here, said Livy, and we do a lot of stuff by hand. We don't need the Forsworn tracing us by our electricity usage.
She tossed her shotgun back into the car.
Come on.
They followed her to a door that led to a spacious entryway. It was clear that they were inside a large office building. Something about the place seemed familiar to Emma. The walls were brick and marble, the floor tiled, and above her she could see an intricate maze of catwalks, metal staircases, and the glint of old ironwork. Livy narrowed her eyes at both of them.
Okay, she said slowly.
Okay what? Said Emma.
You just passed through a corridor whose walls were packed with salt, gold, and cold iron, Livy said. A crazy old millionaire built this place. He believed in ghosts, and he stuffed this building with everything that's meant to repel the supernatural. Some of it does still work.
The door behind them banged. Cameron had returned.
Divya says Diana's not back yet, he said. You want me to take these two upstairs to wait?
Yeah.
Livy rubbed the back of her hand across her forehead tiredly.
They made it in here. Maybe they are harmless.
You mean maybe I'm really your brother, said Julian. Livy's back stiffened.
I didn't say that.
She gestured at Cameron. Take them to one of the newbie rooms. Make sure there are guards on the floor. Without another word, she turned and walked away, heading for one of the iron staircases. Julian exhaled sharply, staring after her. Emma couldn't help it. Her heart ached at his expression. He looked as if he were being crushed from the inside out, the image of him cradling his sister's body as she bled out in the council hall rose like a nightmare behind her eyes. She caught up with Livy in the stairwell. Livy turned to her, and the scars on her face cut at Emma again as if she could feel the pain of getting them.
Seriously, Livy said, what do you want?
Come on, Livy, said Emma, and Livy raised her eyebrows.
You know it's really Julian. In your heart, you know. In the car he tried to protect you from bumping your head, just like he always has. He can't help himself. No one could act like that, or fake it.
Livy tensed. You don't understand. I can't take this. Emma shoved her phone into Livy's hands. Livy stared at it as if she'd never seen an iPhone before. Then she shook her head.
You might be surprised to hear this, but we don't really get much cell reception here, she said.
Cute, said Emma. I want you to look at the photos.
She jabbed at the phone with a shaking finger.
Pictures over the last 5 years. Look, here's Drew.
She heard Livy suck in her breath.
And Mark at the beach, and here's Helen and Aline's wedding. And Ty, last month.
Livy made a half choked noise. Ty? Is still alive in your world? Emma froze. Yes, she whispered. Yes, of course he is. Libby tightened her hand on the phone. She turned and fled up the stairs, her boots clanging against the iron framework. But not before Emma saw that her eyes were shining with tears.
Chapter 18. Hell Rising. As Julian and Emma followed Cameron through the Bradbury lobby, they passed several other groups of Livy's rebels. That was what Julian was calling them in his mind, anyway. These were Livy's people. She was clearly important here. He felt proud of her at the same time that he felt a thousand other emotions tearing through him. Joy, despair, horror, fear, grief and love and hope. They battered at him like the sea at high tide. And yearning, too. A yearning for Emma that felt like knives in his blood. When she spoke, he couldn't stop staring at her mouth, the way her top lip curved like a perfectly made bow. Was this why he'd begged Magnus to turn his feelings for her off? He couldn't remember if it had ever been like this before, or if now was worse. He was drowning. Look, Emma whispered, touching his arm, and his skin burned where she touched him, and stop, he told himself fiercely. Stop! It's Maya Roberts and Bat Velasquez. Thankful for the distraction, Julian glanced over to see the girl who was the werewolf representative to the council in his reality. Her hair was in two thick braids, and she was descending a set of stairs next to a handsome, scarred boy who Julian recognized as her boyfriend. Like Livy, their clothes looked like they'd been scrounged from an Army-Navy store. Military jackets, camo, boots, and bullet belts. There were a lot of bullets in this world. The front doors of the building had been boarded up, the boards glopped with cement to hold them in place. Rows of nails next to the doors held guns of all shapes and sizes. Boxes of ammo were stacked on the floor. On the wall nearby, someone had written, "Angels and ministers of grace defend us," in red paint. They followed Cameron up another set of wood and iron stairs. The inside of the building had probably been breathtakingly beautiful once, when light had streamed through the windows and the glass roof overhead. Even now it was striking, though the windows and roof were boarded over, the terracotta walls cracked. Electric lights burned sodium yellow, and the web of stairs and catwalks angled blackly through the twilight gloom as they passed rebel guards armed with pistols. "Lots of guns," said Emma, a little dubiously, as they reached the top floor. "Bullets don't work on demons, but they'll still take down a bad vamp or an Andarkand," said Cameron. They were passing along a walkway. Beyond the iron balustrade on the left was a yawning darkness of the atrium. The right wall was lined with doors. "There used to be a branch of the LAPD in this building, you know, back when there were police. Demons took them out in minutes, but they left behind plenty of Glocks." He paused. "Here we are." He pushed open a plain wooden door and flicked on the light. Julian followed Emma into the room. It had clearly once been an office, repurposed into a bedroom. "Newbie rooms," Livy had said. There was a desk and an open wardrobe where a motley collection of clothes hung. The walls were pale stucco and warm old wood, and through a doorway Julian could glimpse a small tiled bathroom. Someone seemed to have taken the time to try to make this place a little nice. A sheet of metal covered the single window, but it had been painted a dark blue dotted with small yellow stars, and there was a colorful blanket on the bed. "Sorry the bed's not bigger," said Cameron. "We don't get too many couples. There are condoms in the nightstand drawer, too." He said it matter-of-factly. Emma blushed. Julian tried to stay expressionless. "Someone will bring you some food," Cameron added. "There are energy bars and Gatorade in the wardrobe if you can't wait. Don't try to leave the room. There are guards all over." He hesitated in the doorway. "Welcome," he added, a little awkwardly, and left.
Emma wasted no time in raiding the wardrobe for energy bars and turned up a small bag of potato chips as a bonus.
You want half? She asked, tossing Julian a bar and holding up the chips.
No. He knew he should be ravenous. He could barely remember the last time they'd eaten. But he actually felt a little sick. He was alone with Emma now, and it was overwhelming.
If Ash is here, where's Annabelle? She said. They came through the portal together.
She could be anywhere in Thule, Julian said. Even if she figured out a way to return to our world, I doubt she'd leave Ash.
Emma sighed.
Speaking of which, I guess we should talk about how we try to get home. It can't be impossible. If we could get into Fairy somehow, there might be someone there, someone who can do magic.
Didn't Libby say the entrances to Fairy were walled off?
We've made it through walls before, Emma said quietly,
and he knew what she was thinking, as he was, of the thorns around the Unseelie Tower.
I know. Julian couldn't stop staring at her.
They were both filthy, both bloody and hungry and exhausted. But against the darkness and chaos of this world, his Emma burned brighter than ever.
Why are you looking at me like that? She said.
She tossed the empty chip bag into a metal wastebasket. Eat your energy bar, Julian. He peeled the wrapper off, clearing his throat.
I should probably sleep on the floor.
She stopped pacing.
If you want, she said. I guess in this world we were always a couple, not peripatai.
I mean, that makes sense. If the Dark War hadn't turned out like it did, we never would have.
How long were we even together here before we were endarkened? Julian said.
Maybe Livy will tell us. I mean, I know she's not really Livy, not our Livy. She's Livy that could have been.
She's alive, Julian said.
He stared down at his energy bar. The thought of eating it made him nauseous.
And she's been through hell. And I wasn't here to protect her.
Emma's brown eyes were dark and direct.
Do you care?
He met her gaze, and for the first time in what felt like forever, he could feel what she was feeling, as he'd been able to for so long. He felt her wariness, her bone-deep hurt, and he knew he'd been the one to hurt her. He'd rejected her over and over, pushed her away, told her he felt nothing.
Emma, his voice was scratchy. The spell? It's broken.
What?
When Livy and Cameron said there was no magic here, they meant it. The spell Magnus put on me. It's not working here. I can feel things again.
Emma just stared.
You mean about me?
Yeah.
When she didn't move, Julian took a step forward and put his arms around her. She stood as stiffly as a wooden carving, her arms at her sides. It was like hugging a statue.
I feel everything, he said desperately. I feel like I did before.
She pulled away from him.
Well, maybe I don't.
Emma. He didn't move toward her. She deserved her space. She deserved whatever she wanted.
She must have dammed up so many words while he'd been under the spell. Words it would have been completely pointless to say to his emotionless self. He could only imagine the control it must have taken.
What do you mean?
You hurt me, Emma said. You hurt me a lot.
She took a shuddering breath.
I know you did it because of a spell, but you had that spell cast on yourself without thinking about how it would affect me, or your family, or your role as a shadow hunter. And I hate to tell you all this now, because we're in this terrible place and you just found out that your sister's alive, sort of, and she looks kind of like Mad Max, which is cool actually, but this is the only place I can't.